From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to a new week. Welcome to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. I am sitting in today for Tony, and I'm Jody Heiss, Senior Vice President here at FRC. Thank you so much for joining us. Boy, we have a packed program, and I want to get to it here in just a moment. But before I do that, I want to take just a brief second to say thank you to every one of you who participated yesterday for the Pray For and Stand With Israel event. We know of more or somewhere in the ballpark of 1,000 different churches all across the country that were participating, thousands of other individuals, including the church that Tony himself preached at yesterday.
Israel doesn't need us. We need Israel. In terms of if we want the blessing of God, we need to align with the word of God and the plan of God, which is to prosper and bless Israel.
And what an incredible thing that even Israeli President Benjamin Netanyahu sent a letter to Tony yesterday thanking him and the many Christians all across the United States for praying for Israel. And of course, we here at the Family Research Council also thank you so much. Of course, since the prayer time yesterday, so much has happened in Israel. We're going to be talking a lot about that today. But the events that have taken place only demonstrate why we need to continue praying for Israel.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Minister of Defense Yoav Gallant bear criminal responsibility for the following international crimes committed on the territory of the State of Palestine.
Incredible. That was Karim Khan, the International Criminal Court's lead prosecutor, announcing that he is seeking an arrest warrant for Benjamin Netanyahu, as well as Defense Minister Yoav Gallant and about three different Hamas terrorists. What in the world can we make of this illegitimate investigation, for which, by the way, the ICC lacks no jurisdiction? They lack jurisdiction. They have no jurisdiction over this whatsoever. Incredible. Carolyn Glick is going to be joining me to discuss this a little bit later in the program, so you want to be sure to get the latest on that. And of course, I'm sure you've seen by now Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi, often referred to as the butcher of Tehran. Well, he died yesterday in a helicopter crash in northwest Iran.
We continue to monitor the situation, but we don't have any insights into the cause of the accident at this point. And certainly I know the Iranians are investigating or will investigate, and so we'll see what the outcome is once their investigation is complete.
Well, that was Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin on investigations into that helicopter crash. But the big question is, what kind of effect is this going to have on the deeply unpopular Iranian regime? Florida Congressman Mike Walz, who is a member of the House Intelligence Committee, is going to be joining me for that conversation here in just a few moments. And last week, a House committee heard testimony on efforts to prevent foreign influences in our election, including non-citizens who are voting.
Recently, we've seen Democratic-run cities allowing non-citizens to vote in local elections. Washington, D.C., New York, Maryland, California, and others have passed legislation to allow non-citizens to vote in elections. This causes a host of problems for a state to maintain clean voter registration lists.
Amazing that we're even having to deal with this. That was House Administration Committee Chairman Brian Stile during his opening remarks at the hearing. So why in the world did Democrats on the committee claim that something that should be uncontroversial, that would be preventing illegal aliens from voting, why are they claiming that that somehow undermines democracy? Well, Hans von Spakovsky, manager of the Election Law Reform Initiative at Heritage Foundation, will be joining me to talk about that. And the more Congress probes, the more evidence comes to light on just how badly leaders at the National Institutes for Health mismanaged the COVID-19 pandemic. Recently released congressional testimony from Dr. Francis Collins, who is the former director at NIH, confirms his belief that the lab leak hypothesis should not be considered a conspiracy theory, despite overwhelming effort to label it as such, as we all witnessed during the unfolding of all of the COVID things. So what in the world did our country lose by overthrowing rights and liberties, even as officials lied to the American public? Well, Dr. Robert Malone, Chief Medical and Regulatory Officer at the Unity Project, will join me for that conversation. And just a reminder before we get into the program, last week the House of Representatives passed the Israel Security Assistance Support Act. You may remember us talking about that last week. It's a piece of legislation that rebukes President Biden for withholding weapons from Israel for their war against Hamas. Friends, listen, I just got to take a moment to say, please, please listen to this. I'm urging you to jump on board with us and sign a petition. We are calling on President Biden to stop withholding weapons to Israel. And we are asking you to help us by signing this petition to help. The more voices, the better. So to sign FRC's petition calling on the Biden administration to stop delaying these weapons shipments to Israel, simply text the word aid, A-I-D, text the word aid to 67742. You can also go to frcaction.org/aid. But either way, please jump on board with us to help put as much pressure as we can on the Biden administration to start supporting Israel. So we've got a lot coming your way here as the program unfolds. Of course, our website is tonyperkins.com. You always want to keep that handy. There are lots and lots of resources available there for you. All right, let's jump into the details of the program. Iran's president, Ibrahim Raisi, died yesterday in a helicopter crash in the mountains of northwest Iran, as you all are aware by now. But his death comes as the embattled Islamic Republic engages in selecting its next supreme leader. Raisi was a top candidate for that position. At least he was favored by the Revolutionary Guards. But what effect could this sudden death of the man who was known, as I said a moment ago, as the Butcher of Tehran, what effect could all of this have on the volatility of the entire region? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Congressman Mike Waltz. He serves on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, as well as the Foreign Affairs Committee. He represents the 6th Congressional District of Florida. Congressman Waltz, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you.
Yeah, hey, thanks so much.
Well, listen, this story is certainly still developing. What's the latest? What do we know so far?
You mean the death of the Iranian president?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, first, I just want to say good riddance. I don't think anyone should be offering their condolences, frankly, certainly not the U.S. State Department or the NATO spokesperson. This man was known as the Butcher of Tehran. Some estimates have him responsible for 20 to 30,000 deaths of political dissidents before he even became president. This was as a prosecutor for the Ayatollah in the 1980s. And then under his presidency, his security forces literally have murdered schoolgirls in the street, hung them, strung them up by cranes, made examples of them brutally for daring to protest wearing hijabs. So this is a brutal authoritarian henchman of the Ayatollah. In terms of changes in Iran's behavior, I don't expect it, frankly, to have much. This is an Islamic dictatorship under Ayatollah Khamenei at the end of the day.
So, as we all know, there's a lot of instability in the Middle East on multiple fronts. What do you anticipate? What kind of effect do you think this is going to have on the region, or do you think it won't have much effect at all?
I don't think it's going to have a heck of a lot of effect. I think the Biden administration, it shouldn't shock anyone, but they're missing an opportunity to call out how brutal and murderous this regime is to its own people, to make a statement, a diplomatic and a symbolic statement that says we stand with the plight and the oppressed Iranian people against their government that was led by Raisi, and now their vice president will take over and is ultimately led as a theocratic dictatorship. What could make a difference and should make a difference, the best way to help our ally Israel, the best way to stop the suffering in Gaza, is to change policy on Iran and cut off their cash. Iran is solely responsible for the training, the resources, the military know-how behind Hamas, behind Hezbollah, and behind the Houthis that are attacking shipping in the Red Sea. It all roads go back to Iran. And if we shut off their oil, we shut off their cash, we shut down their resources, we go back to the maximum pressure under the Trump campaign and put them in economic survival mode, then they don't have the diplomatic, economic, military wherewithal to support terrorism all over the Middle East. So that's what we could and should be doing. But unfortunately, under this administration, not only will you see more appeasement, whether it's this president of Iran or the next, I just still can't believe you have condolences coming from our State Department spokesperson for the president of the largest state sponsor of terrorism in the world. And that's the unfortunate state of things and why we have to win in November.
Yeah, unbelievable. Your point's extremely well taken. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt the world is a safer place without Raisi. But the change, as you said, in the instability in the region probably is not going to change. But what could change is our response here in the United States, but probably not likely to happen. If I can switch topics real quickly, the International Criminal Court, as you know, issued an arrest warrant on Prime Minister Netanyahu. Your reaction to that?
Well, look, if Hamas's strategy and Iran, who's behind them, strategy is to sacrifice the lives of thousands of Palestinian people by using them as human shields in order to turn world opinion on Israel, they have to think they're winning right now. And that's just truly sad and unfortunate. And the Biden administration, the progressive left, the Europeans, the UN, and certainly the corrupt and ridiculous International Criminal Court are playing right into the terrorists' hands and their backers' hands. Look, this has been denounced on both sides of the aisle in the House. I'm glad to see my Democrat colleagues denouncing this, putting the leader of the democratically elected parliament in Israel on the same level as the terrorist thug dictatorship Hamas in terms of indictments. It would be laughable if it weren't so serious. It's just that ridiculous.
Yeah, it really is. And Congressman Mike Waltz, always an honor to have you on Washington Watch with us. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. And we'll be pushing legislation to take action against the criminal court for this. This is way over the line, but thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. All right, friends, there's another reason why we need to be very cautious about every entanglement in a one world order system. All right, more on the decision by the International Criminal Court prosecutor to issue an arrest warrant for Netanyahu right after the break. Stay tuned. Much more coming your way.
It begins here and here and here every day. Before you stand, you need solid ground. Standing in a culture that wants you to surrender the truth won't work unless you have a firm foundation. At Family Research Council, we have that firm foundation, and you can find us standing. We stand for the value of all human life. We stand for the right of families to flourish. And every day, we stand for your freedom to believe and to live out those beliefs, both at home and abroad. We work with government officials, educating them on the issues from a biblical worldview. And when necessary, we hold them accountable. We equip Christians across America to be informed and to take action in their communities. With our daily radio program, television appearances, and vast online presence, we reach people where they are. We envision an America where all human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. And that won't be realized if we're not standing. Stand for faith. Stand for family. Stand for freedom. Stand with us at FRC.
All of us are born with the desire to find truth and meaning. Where did I come from? What happens when I die? While our answers to these questions may divide us, we are united in our need for the freedom to answer life's biggest questions and make life's biggest decisions for ourselves. That's why religious freedom matters for everyone. Religious freedom matters because the powerful have long wanted to control those who are less powerful. Religious freedom matters because the freedom of those who are different is often threatened by those who believe different is dangerous. At the Center for Religious Liberty at Family Research Council, we promote religious freedom for everyone because the only alternative is religious freedom for no one. We encourage Americans and the American government to engage and advocate for the persecuted, and they do. We work every day to bring good news to the afflicted, to proclaim liberty to captives and freedom to prisoners. We do it because that's what Jesus does. We work to give freedom to others because we ourselves have been set free.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Glad to have you joining us today. I'm Jody Heiss sitting in for Tony. And a lot we're covering today. You just saw a little bit a while ago, Kareem Khan, he's the prosecutor for the International Criminal Court. He announced today that he's seeking arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, as well as three Hamas terrorists due to allegations of war crimes. And this is how Prime Minister Netanyahu responded.
Mr. Khan creates a twisted and false moral equivalence between the leaders of Israel and the henchmen of Hamas. This is like creating a moral equivalence after September 11th between President Bush and Osama bin Laden, or during World War II between FDR and Hitler.
So he hit it on the head. Folks, it's worth noting that, like the United States, Israel is not a member of the International Criminal Court and does not recognize its jurisdiction. But the broader question is, what will this gesture mean for Israel's ongoing efforts to defeat Hamas? Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is Carolyn Glick. She's the senior contributing editor at the Jewish News Syndicate and host of the Carolyn Glick Show on JNS. Carolyn, always great to have you on Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on your program today.
All right, so overall, your thoughts on the announcement by the ICC?
You know, it's interesting. Not only was Prime Minister Netanyahu correct, I think that he was understanding the problem with the ICC, because what the ICC is doing is actually a war crime in and of itself, because not only are they threatening to unlawfully kidnap and imprison Israeli leaders because they have no jurisdiction against Israel. So any arrest warrant that they put out against Israel is actually a threat to unlawfully kidnap and incarcerate the Israeli leadership. But it's also a war crime because it provides material support for Hamas. And Hamas is a genocidal terrorist organization that is charter bound to commit a genocide of the Jewish people. That's explicitly what it says in their charter, to kill all of the Jews. So by giving aid and comfort to Hamas, which is what these arrest warrants do, they're propagating, they're facilitating Hamas's achievements of their goal. They're also propagating bigotry and anti-Semitism, because they are propagating a blood libel against Israel and our leaders, alleging falsely that we are deliberately starving and deliberately targeting for murder Palestinian civilians in Gaza. Nothing could be further from the truth. As the UN's own corrected statistics on the death total of Palestinians show, the civilian to terrorist death toll, or actually civilian to militant, if you will, death toll, is the lowest in human history. It's about 1.3 to 1 civilians per terrorist, and that's a lower death toll by far than what the U.S. forces in places like Mosul and Fallujah in Iraq achieved, which was a 4 to 1 civilian to terrorist death toll there. And here it's 1.3 civilians for every terrorist killed. So this is something that's unprecedented in human history. And yet they're propagating this blood libel in order to deny Israel the right to self-defense. So they're giving material support to genocide by enabling Hamas to continue to commit its war of genocide against Israel. They're propagating anti-Semitism, which is also a war crime, and they're doing all of this without jurisdiction because, as you rightly mentioned, Israel, like the United States, is not a signatory to the Rome Treaty. We are not a member of the ICC.
Excellent points there that you bring up, Carolyn. And, you know, we all know there's some political division in Israel, but it is encouraging to see how even political opponents of the prime minister are calling this decision both a moral and diplomatic disaster. The unity, are you seeing that in Israel, that the unified result of this outrageous decision?
Absolutely, because this isn't against Prime Minister Netanyahu or Defense Minister Yoav Gallant. This is against the military of Israel, our soldiers, our sons and daughters, and against our state. Because by pushing forward with this, with these prosecutions, not only by making a moral equivalence between Israel and Hamas, which is in and of itself an atrocity, but by pushing forward with these prosecutions, with these arrest warrants, the ICC is saying that Israel has no right to self-defense. Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant are not private individuals. They are the democratically elected prime minister and defense minister of Israel. They are the repository of the people's will. They are not there of their own volition. They didn't seize power. They were elected to perform their duties. And by vilifying them, by criminalizing their just actions and leading this country in a war for national survival, the ICC is saying that the Jewish people have no right to self-defense. And when you are surrounded by enemies who are actively seeking to annihilate you, and Israel is fighting a seven-front war today, then what you are saying is that you support the annihilation of the Jewish people. That is why you will find no division among Israelis from the far left to the far right over the injustice and really the atrocity that these arrest warrants and the intention to issue them manifests.
I don't know. I think most people look at this and probably say to themselves that this is not going to have an effect on how Israel continues its war against Hamas. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that, and I think that Prime Minister Netanyahu has stated that repeatedly in his remarks since late last month when it first was reported that Karim Khan intended to issue these arrest warrants. But I think that this is very dangerous for the rest of the free world, because if they go through with this and they get away with it, if they aren't massively sanctioned and indeed subjected to personal liability and criminal prosecution for their actions, which are unlawful and again constitute war crimes in and of themselves, then they're going to be empowered. Karim Khan and his fellow criminal fake prosecutors at this kangaroo court of the ICC are going to become even more powerful. And they're going to use their newfound power because they've been allowed to get away with this in order to expand the writ of their false prosecutions of democratically elected leaders. They're going after Israeli leaders today because the Jewish state is the only Jewish state and it's internationally isolated. But if they get away with this, then tomorrow they're coming for the American army and American political leaders. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind. They've already tried. And if they succeed with Israel, they'll try it again.
Carolyn Glick, I can't tell you how great it is to have your input and wisdom on all of this. Thank you, as always, for joining us on Washington Watch. All right, friends, after the break, we'll be discussing congressional testimony last week on the effort to strengthen election integrity. So stay tuned. We'll be back.
Everything we do begins as an idea. Before there can be acts of courage, there must be the belief that some things are worth sacrificing for. Before there can be marriage, there is the idea that man should not be alone. Before there was freedom, there was the idea that individuals are created equal. It's true that all ideas have consequences, but we're less aware that all consequences are the fruit of ideas. Before there was murder, there was hate. Before there was a Holocaust, there was the belief by some people that other people are undesirable. Our beliefs determine our behavior, and our beliefs about life's biggest questions determine our worldview. Where did I come from? Who decides what is right and wrong? What happens when I die? Our answers to these questions explain why people see the world so differently. Debates about abortion are really disagreements about where life gets its value. Debates over sexuality and gender and marriage are really disagreements about whether the rules are made by us or for us. What we think of as political debates are often much more than that. They're disagreements about the purpose of our lives and the source of truth. As Christians, our goal must be to think biblically about everything. Our goal is to help you see beyond red and blue, left and right, to see the battle of ideas at the root of it all. Our goal is to equip Christians with a biblical worldview and help them advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square. Cultural renewal doesn't begin with campaigns and elections. It begins with individuals turning from lies to truth. But that won't happen if people can't recognize a lie and don't believe truth exists. We want to help you see the spiritual war behind the political war, the truth claims behind the press release, and the forest from the trees.
Well, welcome back to Washington Watch. I tell you so much in the news today, and we are trying to bring to you the highlights and present it from a biblical worldview perspective. I'm Jody Heiss. Honored to be sitting in today for Tony, and glad to have you on board with us as well. I want to switch gears a little bit from what's happening in the Middle East. As the 2024 elections approach, we are continuing to examine efforts to promote voter integrity initiatives. And last week, the Committee on House on the House Administration, they heard testimony on efforts to prevent, catch this, they heard testimony on efforts to prevent non-citizens from voting and other foreign influence. That ought to be a no-brainer, shouldn't it? It's amazing that we're even having these type of battles at the congressional level. But as more blue states and cities are moving to allow non-citizens to vote, the question is, can we be confident that those voters are not also going to participate in federal elections? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Hans von Spakovsky. He's the manager of the Election Law Reform Initiative at the Heritage Foundation. He also served 2 years as a member of the Federal Election Commission, which, of course, is the authority charged with enforcing campaign finance laws for congressional and presidential elections. Hans, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you.
Johnny, it's great to talk to you again.
All right, so let's just jump into it here. The hearing took place last week. Give me your thoughts on what you experienced. You were right there in the thick of it.
Well, it's really interesting. The Democratic witnesses, the Democratic members of the committee basically wanted to say, this isn't a problem. It just doesn't happen at all. And the whole intent of even talking about it is to try to come up with measures that will suppress votes, which is just ridiculous. There's evidence from all over the country that aliens, and by the way, I got in trouble. I was criticized for using the word aliens as opposed to non-citizens.
I'm sure you were.
That's the correct legal term, okay? But look, the problem is states aren't doing very much to verify citizenship. So it's extremely easy for someone who's not a citizen to register to vote and to vote in elections. And when that is discovered, oftentimes nothing is done about it. Jody, one of the things I related was I actually was on a county election board in Virginia more than a decade ago. We discovered almost 300 aliens who were on our voter rolls. We removed them, but they'd already, about half of them had cast ballots. We sent it both to the local DA and to the U.S. Justice Department. And as you can probably imagine, neither did anything about it.
Surprise, surprise. And that's part of the problem that we're dealing with here. This issue of election integrity has to be addressed. And what we're talking about here still is just unbelievable to me that we're even discussing this. One of the Democrats on the committee at the hearing that you testified in last week literally made this statement that the coup starts here. I mean, the claim was that Republicans were really in an effort to try to undermine the confidence in our elections. But just the opposite is what's really taking place. You agree?
Yeah, no, I do agree, because what we're trying to do is put in place the different kinds of statutes provisions that will allow us to make sure only citizens are registering and voting. And look, that protects all eligible Americans. You know, it doesn't matter whether they're Black or white, Asian or Hispanic. It doesn't matter which political party they support. Every time an alien illegally votes, that alien is negating the vote of a citizen, no matter which political party they support. Democrats just don't seem to want to or to understand that, or to basically ignore it.
Yeah, well, there, as we all know, in Washington, there is a political motivation for every position, and I'm sure that's the case here. Is it possible to gauge the extent of non-citizen voting? Do we have any idea?
Well, it's difficult to do because of the fact that so many states aren't doing anything to verify citizenship. There are at least two studies out that have looked at survey information. So this is actually asking questions of voters. And in those different surveys, voters have admitted that I'm not a U.S. citizen, but I voted in the election. There's at least one study from more than a decade ago, again, based on survey information from voters, that estimated that in the 2008 election, 6.4% of the aliens in the country actually voted in that election. And the latest estimate that just came out was that somewhere around 15% of the aliens who are in the country are registered to vote.
Wow. Now, we all know that for an illegal individual to vote in federal elections, they're not supposed to do that. It's illegal. That being said, how confident are you that there will be no non-citizens that are going to be voting in this upcoming federal election?
Oh, I have no confidence in that at all. I work for the Heritage Foundation, but I'm also on the board of another organization called the Public Interest Legal Foundation. And they actually have done studies where they have gone in to look at voter registration lists. And through various ways of checking, they have found literally thousands of aliens who have been registered to vote in different states. Look, in Pennsylvania, just a couple of years ago, the Secretary of State there was forced to resign after it came out that the DMV for the last 20 years had been allowing aliens who go in to get a driver's license to register to vote. And nobody was doing anything about it. And it was thousands of them.
Thank you so much, Hans von Spakovsky, Heritage Foundation. Awesome information. Always honored to have you. All right, friends, we got the latest on the COVID pandemic coming your way right after the break. Don't go anywhere. It's coming your way in a moment.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
Jesus said in John 15, "These things I've spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full." In 2024, in these divided and uncertain times, how can this be possible? By abiding in Him through His Word. At Family Research Council, we want to help you do that, which is the reason for the Stand on the Word Bible reading plan. In just 10 to 15 minutes each day, you will have read the entire Bible in just 2 years. But more importantly, you will be abiding in Him daily. Find our Bible reading plan at frc.org/Bible. And join Tony Perkins each weekday for a 10-minute devotional inspired by the daily reading and designed to encourage you on this journey through the Bible. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, the grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Honored to be with you today. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch. I'm sitting in today for Tony. My name is Jody High, Senior Vice President here at FRC. And let me give you another alert. And I say this, we here at FRC, as you well know, and we believe you, our viewers and listeners, all of us collectively are involved in trying to make a difference, trying to move the needle. So we ask you to not just listen, not just be a viewer, but to participate in what's going on. So I've got another alert for you. The first one we had was urging you to sign a petition asking the Biden administration to provide weapons to Israel. And you can do that by texting the word AID to 67742. That's AID, AID to 67742. Well, I have another alert for you right now. Just by way of reminder, we've been talking about this for some weeks, but the World Health Assembly is going to be meeting later this month. And so time is running out for you to tell Washington not to let the Biden administration cede our U.S. authority and sovereignty to the World Health Organization. And so your voice needs to be heard. And for information on how you can do that, you can text the word WHO. WHO, that stands for World Health Organization. Text the word WHO to 67742, or you can go also to frcaction.com/WHO. But please, we're all in this thing together. It takes all of us to make a difference. All right, let's move on. In congressional testimony last week, the principal deputy director of the National Institute of Health, also known as you know as NIH, well, they admitted that the agency had funded gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology in China through an organization called the EcoHealth Alliance.
Dr. Tabak, did NIH fund gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology through EcoHealth?
It depends on your definition of gain-of-function research. If you're speaking about the generic term, yes, we did.
Kind of reminds me of, it depends on what is. You remember that? a discussion for another time. But that was an exchange between Congresswoman Debbie Lesko and the NIH Principal Deputy Director Lawrence Tabak during his testimony last week. Well, now EcoHealth has already had its federal funding suspended for its failure to provide adequate oversight of research that was subcontracted to the Wuhan lab. But this testimony provided new insight into the likelihood of a lab leak launching the COVID pandemic, as well as the U.S.'s involvement in funding gain-of-function research at the Wuhan lab. Well, a lot to get into here, and joining me now to talk about it is Dr. Robert Malone, Chief Medical and Regulatory Officer for the Unity Project, and an internationally recognized physician scientist who specializes in advanced development of medical countermeasures to infectious diseases. So, Dr. Malone, welcome back to Washington Watch. Well, we need you right now to unpack all of this for us.
Yeah, it was quite a stunning testimony, and topping off additional testimony by Daszak, in which he made a series of clear, most gentle way I could put it is misstatements, but it's now increasingly being recognized that he lied to Congress in sworn testimony.
Let's start with this, and then I want to get right back to where you are. Gain of function. We've got some viewers and listeners right now. We've heard this terminology. What are we talking about when we talk about gain of function?
Thank you for that. And it is appropriate to bring the viewers up to speed on what we're talking about. Basically, particularly in virology, but also in other disciplines having to do with modern molecular technology, it's become the norm to manipulate an organism, whether it's a bacterial virus, a bacterium, or a human virus, or a mouse virus, or a bat virus, to manipulate that agent, that biologic agent, in order to change its fundamental biology, its properties, to do so in using molecular techniques or things that are akin to breeding techniques that we use with animals. In particular, to confer new properties to that agent, that virus or that bacteria. So as the Tabak was suggesting, the general public understands gain of function to be the engineering of a biologic entity, in this case a virus, to confer new or additional characteristics to that virus or biologic agent. Now, the hair splitting that you heard ongoing right there was that the NIH has kind of in real time, right after the testimony with Anthony Fauci, the infamous exchange with Rand Paul, the NIH surreptitiously changed the definition of gain of function research. And Tabak testified that he doesn't know who did it, but someone changed the definition to a very nuanced one, in which if we're talking about a pathogen like a virus that causes disease, if it doesn't cause human disease and be readily transmitted from human to human, then the NIH considers this, what we would all consider to be gain of function, to not be gain of function. So that means that people can do these kinds of experiments where they confer new properties or capabilities to a virus without calling it gain of function and without running into the prohibitions or oversight, if it's not already efficiently transmitted from human to human. And the hair splitting goes a little deeper, as testified by Daszak, because in that case, EcoHealth and the Wuhan Institute of Virology were dealing with a bat virus that wasn't yet highly infectious to humans, but they were seeking it to make it infectious to humans, highly infectious to humans. So the whole gain of function was intended to convert something that was not currently infectious to humans to something that was, but under the current definition, that was allowed. That was not considered to be gain of function. Now, if you're not completely confused yet, I can carry on, but you get the point. This is bureaucratic heresy.
Yeah. Yeah, it, well, it's horrifying. I mean, look, there was a time when you could not even say that COVID-19, which, by the way, killed millions of people, there was a time you couldn't even say it was a man-made virus that escaped from a Chinese lab, and that the U.S. helped fund it. But the more Congress investigates, the more it appears that not only is this true, but many of those who were calling such things a conspiracy, they knew it was true. Yes. And Dr. Fauci, in fact, said, yeah, he lied. Dr. Fauci unequivocally said that U.S. has never been a part of gain of function, never has, never will, blah, 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 blah. So fill us in on this. Where are we with what's taking place with the investigation and what we're now finding out?
Well, this goes deep, and with the Tabak testimony, we learned a lot of other nefarious activities, such as, I think the gentleman's name is Morenz, who is one of Dr. Fauci's top lieutenants, or was actively avoiding Freedom of Information Act requests by deleting emails and then directing Dr. Daszak, for instance, to correspond via Gmail, rather than by the usual NIH email addresses, and that Dr. Morenz had been tutored on how to do this to avoid Freedom of Information Act disclosures by a FOIA officer within NIH. So one of the NIH bureaucrat functionaries trained Fauci's lieutenant into how to circumvent FOIA requests by deleting emails surreptitiously so that there wouldn't be traceability within the federal email system. This is clearly fraud. We have fraud and subterfuge, clear illegal activity going on in order to avoid accountability and presumably to avoid Dr. Fauci's having accountability. Within this email chain in which this is being discussed, and I think this is partially discovered through subpoena and FOIA of communications from Daszak. So Mr. Morenz was able to delete emails on the NIH server, but was not able to delete them on Daszak's server. And then the committee got the emails from Daszak's server that were no longer available on the official government server. And that's how this subterfuge apparently got uncovered. But also implicated in the email chains were a number of people like Christian Anderson at Scripps Institute in La Jolla, and other individuals that participated in various what we now know were misleading communications, for instance, in The Lancet, that vehemently denied that there was any chance that this virus originated at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And these people were stakeholders and defenders of the approved narrative. So and had been involved in the research endeavor and are now clearly implicated.
We've got something deeper, and that's where I want to go to leap to the next area. So, I mean, what you're talking about is horrifying. We have definitions changing in the middle of an investigation. We have emails disappearing. We learned that U.S. tax dollars did fund EcoHealth, which was working on gain-of-function research in Wuhan. And now you have been, among others, rightfully so, critical of the World Health Organization's pandemic treaty that will be discussed next week at the assembly where they meet. Do the revelations that are now coming forth highlight the concerns that are that people are bringing out about these unelected bureaucrats, in essence, seizing U.S. sovereignty and who knows what else, where there has been evidently so much corruption in the World Health Organization?
Well, the WHO has been known to be a corrupt organization, and functionally, even since its inception, to have very deep connections with the U.S., NATO, and Five Eyes intelligence community. It also has deep connections with the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, and through that, the People's Revolutionary Army, Revolutionary Army of China. So the WHO is notoriously corrupt, as you say. It relies on a variety of surreptitious funding, including from the pharmaceutical industry. And I personally witnessed the former director general basically doing a shakedown of my client, seeking additional money in exchange for favorable positioning of their vaccine candidate, which at the time was for Ebola.
So why does the Biden administration, why are they on board with giving World Health Organization global authority?
More than on board. It's more than them being on board. The IHRs and the pandemic accord language originated from the Biden's HHS. Okay, so this is not something that originated in Geneva or at the WHO or on Klaus Schwab's desk. This came up from the U.S. HHS bureaucracy. And they seem to be all in. This is part of a much broader agenda that involves Department of Agriculture and many others, which is this One Health agenda. And in some of the articles you forwarded, they touched on some aspects of this broader agenda that's being pursued here, but they overlooked that there is a widespread call among many, many academic journals, as I recall, thousands, that are calling
about 30 seconds.
That are calling for climate change being defined as a pandemic health threat that would fall under this new guidance. So what's going on with Biden? Who knows?
In just a few seconds, finish your thought. What's going on with Biden?
The Biden administration seems to be deeply committed to this new one world order globalist agenda. And
Bingo.
This seems to be a power play moving through a surrogate World Health Organization in order to advance that and to advance Agenda 2030, which is the United Nations, what we now consider a treaty that was put in place by Mr. Obama.
Dr. Robert Malone, got to leave it there, but thank you so much. Push for a one world government coming straight from our government. Thank you so much for joining us and for your incredible information. Friends, that wraps up this edition of Washington Watch. We'll be back with you tomorrow, so don't go anywhere. God bless.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.